From the land to Grand Hill University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson of TGM. Gary Schnittke will be here to discuss his latest pinnings for the Farm Doc Daily website, and we'll talk about the weather forecast. It's kind of ugly in the United States. With Drew Lerner, he's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, March corn for the day finished at $6.62 1/4. That was up 10 1/4. The May at $6.61 3/4, up 9 3/4. And December, 6 higher at $6.02 1/4. January beans, $14.81, up 2 1/2. The March up 4 3/4. $14.84 1/2 the settlement price. November beans at $13.90 1/2, up 1. Bean meal, $3.60 higher. The bean oil up 26 cents. Wheat futures soft red, 17 1/4 cents higher at $7.67 3/4. The hard red at $8.64, also up 17 cents for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead option at $157.70, up $2.12 1/2 cents. The feeders at $185.72 1/2. 70 higher in lean hogs, $88.40, up $4.15. Crude oil, $78.24 a barrel, $2 higher. And the wholesale price of gasoline up 2 1/8 cents a cent at $2.26 a gallon. Greg Johnson now joins us from TGM, Total Grain Marketing, right here in Champaign County, Illinois, to discuss what's happening in Chicago and look forward to the volatility of the weather in the United States and in South America today. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Well, let's talk about volatility in the United States to begin with as it relates to weather. Big storm causes mostly issues with being able to move the crop from one place to the other. End users, I suppose, try to get things in place prior to any big storm. What does the impact have locally, for instance, on a grain elevator?
Well, if you're dependent upon shipping grain to the river, for example, then your market kind of fades away for a few days until the weather clears up. If you're a rail market that and you don't get, and the rail still has service available, then you're able to take advantage of that. So the overall futures price really doesn't change a whole lot. But what you do see is a little bit of a change in basis levels. If you're still able to ship either by truck or by rail, you might be able to get a little bit better basis bid. If you're doing it by barge or someplace where the weather might slow down transportation, then your basis might widen out a little bit. But again, that should all just be temporary. Once the weather straightens up, then you should see things, you know, go back to normal.
What do you see out of South America today as it relates to the weather?
Brazil, which produces three times as many beans as Argentina, Brazil looks good. Getting rains in the central and northern parts, a little bit dry in the southern part in that Rio Grande do Sul area, but they're just getting them planted there. So dry weather this early in Rio Grande do Sul probably isn't a big issue yet. Argentina, on the other hand, they're behind. They're only like 60% planted. Normally they're 75% planted by this time, and they've been extremely dry. Farmers are waiting for a little bit of rain in certain areas before they even plant the beans. So Argentina is, that's the concerning area right now, but I try to keep in mind the big picture. Number one, they're just getting planted, so dry weather isn't irreversibly damaging the crop at this point. And number two, Brazil probably can more than make up for any shortfall in Argentina if the weather continues to be good. But January is obviously that key month when a lot of pods get set and we start to see pod fill in Brazil.
Are farmers interested in making sales this week?
We have seen a little bit of a pickup in the soybean market. With the rally that we've had, we're only 30 cents from the recent highs that we made back in September, mid-September, when beans were over $15, we're over $14.80 on the board today. So we're approaching those recent highs, and that's triggered a little bit of farmer selling, mainly in the old crop, a little bit of new crop, not much, but corn We're not seeing a lot of sales in corn. We've sold off so much here in the last month and a half, 2 months, that even with the little bit of rally today, farmers are content to wait it out and see if they can get a little bit more back before they make any sales of old crop or new crop corn.
Do you think they will be content to continue to wait it out even if a little bit more back comes?
I think they will sell on rallies. I think they will lower their sights. They've kind of had $7 in mind, but each month it clicks away. I think their resolve probably will get a little bit weaker, and they'll probably lower those sights from $7 maybe down to that 675, 680 range on the board.
What are you hearing from the industry this early in the game still about the January 12 final crop production report and the WASDE figures, as well as grain stocks? Any changes in the offing, do you suppose?
Well, the crops seem to have gotten better towards the end, and so the old adage is that big crops keep getting bigger, and so I think, if anything, the trade is probably looking for steady to higher yield numbers out of the January report, and then unless exports pick up, we're starting to, you know, the government lowered exports by 75 million, but some traders think they should lower that by another 50 to 75 million if we don't see exports pick up here soon. Ethanol demand has kind of peaked out. The margins are starting to tighten. And then even feed demand, you know, with the avian bird flu got traders thinking that maybe we might see a reduction in demand on the feed side. So all three demand components are not looking like they're going to increase. Hopefully we can just keep them steady at this point, and then, you know, the production side steady to maybe a little bit higher. So at this point, I don't know that there's a lot of friendliness going into the January report, but that's still a few weeks away, so maybe something will change between now and then.
Does that mean you can build an ending stocks number to 1.35, 1.4 billion bushels?
Theoretically, yes. Now, you know, we haven't talked about Russia and Ukraine, and if they don't export as much, maybe we'll see our exports pick back up if we can capture some of that market that they usually normally supply to, the Middle East market, for example. But at this point, we haven't hit that market yet. So, yeah, if worst case scenario, you could probably see a 1.3, 1.35 billion bushel carryout. We hope we don't see that, but you know, I wouldn't rule that out at this point.
It makes a game of chicken between now and January 12, doesn't it?
Exactly. If only we knew, right?
Yeah. Well, that's always the case. If only I knew, I would have sold then. And I thought about it. That's as much as you can say usually.
Yes. Exactly.
For new crop sales, what have producers been up to? Anything at all?
Yeah. Our new crop book is way behind normal. Farmers are still trying to market the old crop corn and beans, and really haven't focused too much on the new crop corn and beans. New crop December corn futures are right at $6, but I think farmers would like to see that go a little bit higher so that they could get $6 cash before making any sales. And then as far as the beans, we're approaching $14 on new crop beans on the board. And, you know, to my way of thinking, if you believe that South America is going to grow a normal crop of beans and then we're going to grow a normal crop of beans, $14 will look pretty good when it's all said and done. But having said that, there's a lot of time between now and then. And if anything goes wrong anywhere in the world, $14 may be too cheap. So as a result, most farmers are sitting back and just waiting, trying to focus on the old crop marketing and haven't really focused too much on the new crop marketing just yet.
We'll focus more on the new crop marketing when I talk to you in the new year. Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Have you registered yet for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits? The IFA series is back on the road. I'll be back out with the Farm Doc team in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb, January 10, 11, and 12. You can join us if you'd like. The cost is just $80. We look forward to seeing you in those three cities in the month of January, but you have to register. All the details are online at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look for IFAS, the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnitke now joins us to discuss his latest penning for the Farm Doc Daily website, found online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
This one's titled Prices Used in Variable Cash Rent Formulas. First, tell me what a variable cash rent is, and then we'll talk about how the prices are fixed into that formula.
Yeah, so a variable cash rent formula typically varies cash rent by gross revenue. So you multiply a rent factor times gross revenue to determine what the rent should be. When you're determining gross revenue, you need a price. And there's four alternatives that are pretty prevalent in the industry. And we looked at what the averages of those four would be from 2008 to 2022.
And by price, you mean price of the crop.
Yep, price of the crop. So we know the yield. Generally, you use a farm yield. So let's say that's 240 bushels per acre. What are you going to use as a price? And some people use the projected price for crop insurance. Some people use the projected average of the projected harvest price. So you get the average of those two. Some people use the cash prices. And we pick April to October cash prices during that period. And another one that some people use is forward prices before harvest. So we used April through August as forward prices and then cash prices in August and through October.
Does it make much difference which one you use?
So again, in any one given year, it could make a difference, right? So those things will vary by year. But if you look at those, and we looked at the average from 2008 to 2022, so sort of the higher price period after the ethanol bill, and there's not a lot of difference. The forward and cash prices were the lowest, and that would be $4.52 for corn. The highest was cash prices, which is $4.76. So there's a 24 cent difference between the low forward and cash price and the high cash prices. And actually, the crop insurance prices were between those two. So just gives you a feel.
Why did that happen, do you suppose?
So if you look at that, the cash prices we used from April through October. Well, April, May, June, you typically have higher cash prices because you carried the crop from harvest to April, May, and June. And also that's sort of this weather scare months as well. So you got those higher cash prices in the formula. Forward prices tend to be below cash prices throughout the pre-harvest period. So that's sort of expected. And, you know, the projected price is a futures price. But, you know, but it's still lower than the cash prices for this period because of the higher cash prices. So the basis is more than made up by picking cash prices from that higher price period.
So the four that you have are pretty narrow in scope in months. What if you add months prior to or after these series of months?
So April to October is the period that we used. If you add March, it doesn't matter much. But if you begin adding January and February to it, it lowers that price because prices typically are lower. If you look at, and again, we went from April to October. If you add November, it tends to lower that price because you're adding another harvest month in there. And the same would be true with December. So, but April through October is a pretty typical period for looking at these. And adding March won't change it much.
Any advice after you've looked at these about what formula should be used?
After looking at these, I was actually surprised with how close they came out. And it's less important what price you pick than I thought there would be. So the price choice isn't as critical as you might think. But if you're going to use forward and cash prices, you might want to have a percent higher rent factor. Or if you're using 32 for cash prices, you might want to use 33 for the forward and cash price, but not a lot of difference.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, part of the Farm Doc team, and he'll be on the road with the rest of the ag economist and myself in January on the 10th. We'll be at the Doubletree in Mount Vernon. The 11th, we'll be in Peoria, East Peoria, at the Paradise Hotel, and on the 12th, we'll be at Ferrandez in DeKalb. You can join us for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. We open the doors, I think, around 7:45 a.m. in the morning. We'll go all morning long. Gary will be there to talk about crop budgets and how those work for the 2023 growing season. We'll take a price outlook with Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin. I know you'll want to ask them about renewable diesel and ethanol. They'll be able to answer those questions. Interest rates and the price of farmland, always top of mind. Bruce Sherrick, the director of the Center for Farmland Research here on campus, will be with us. And the 2023 Farm Bill, of course, will come up next year, too. And we'll have a couple of specialists with us, Jonathan Kappas and Nick Polson. You can join us. All you have to do is get yourself registered for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. You can get to the registration page through willag.org. There's a link there. Or you can go to the farmdocdaily.illinois.edu website. That's farmdocdaily.edu. Illinois.edu. The cost is $80 if you register online, $85 if you download and mail in a registration, and of course you could walk in. The cost in that case is $90. Again, we'll be on the 10th, the 11th, and 12th in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb next month. It's Wednesday. We always check in with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah. Thanks for not having me travel over there.
Well, yeah, that might be tough. Speaking of that, a lot of people will be traveling. Maybe we should stay here, at least to begin with, in the United States and begin in the Northwest and maybe in your part of the world, too, down to Texas, and kind of make our way across the United States with this storm and when things will happen and what the issues will be. So where do you want to start?
Yeah, let's start in the plains, I guess, because that's where it's happening right now. We have snow falling at this time across the Dakotas and Minnesota and stretching back into Montana. And this is the leading edge of the really, truly cold air. And as we go forward through the night tonight and into the day tomorrow, we'll shift all that snow and the wind into the central plains and into the western corn belt. And then during the day tomorrow, we'll quickly push it through the heart of Illinois and parts of Missouri and on into Indiana. And finally, as we get into Friday, we'll push it across the Great Lakes region and into the Northeast. And, you know, this system is probably most impressive with its wind field. Now, we are going to see snow. We are going to have blizzard, and it's going to be nasty in that sense. But I think for most folks, the biggest issue is, you know, I know the snow is an inconvenience, but with the wind, it's just going to be horrific. I mean, it's just going to blow this snow around like crazy. It'll be very difficult to plow the snow until the winds stop, because it's just going to blow right back on again. And the wind chill factors is going to be crazy, 50 and 60 degrees below zero in the northern plains and northern part of the Midwest, or northwestern Midwest, we'll call it. It might even be as low as minus 30 in the Texas Panhandle for a wind chill. Just really brutally nasty, and the winds are just going to be gusting for 2 days at least. The heavier snows certainly will impact the heart of the Midwest, coming out of probably eastern Iowa, more likely Missouri, into the heart of Illinois and up into Michigan. We will see probably 4 to 8 inches of accumulating snow in those areas, with something greater downwind from Lake Michigan, where we'll likely see some impressive lake effect conditions. The snow will make travel very difficult. The good news is that if most folks can't travel until after the workday on Friday, maybe it'll be a little bit better on Saturday and Sunday. So I know Sunday's probably a little too late to get to your destination. So there will be a challenge across a fair amount of the Midwest because of the newly fallen snow and all the wind and cold. So the best thing to recommend to folks is just to make sure that they have, you know, good blanket in the car and Don't go standing outside too long with those wind chills like they are.
Next week, what does the weather do?
Dramatically different. Much warmer. We're going to see an impressive turnaround. About as quickly as the cold comes in, it's going to go. By the time we get to the end of next week, temperatures will be back a little bit above normal, most likely, across a big part, certainly the plains and the western United States. Probably a fair amount of the Midwest will also be ebbing its way above normal once again, too. Now, what the pattern that's going to be changing back to is one that's going to become eventually a southwest flow pattern. That means more storminess will likely evolve as we get into the last days of December and the first week in January. So we'll start pushing more moisture across the Midwest, not necessarily into hard red winter wheat country quite yet, but eastern portions of the plains and certainly through the heart of the Midwest and the Delta. We'll see a couple of storm systems in that second week of the outlook. Both rain and some snow will occur with that.
Turn your attention now to South America. Recap what's been happening there for me.
Yeah, another relatively dry week in Argentina. And we do have a rain event that's going to get underway here tonight and slowly work its way from southwest to northeast across the country Thursday into Sunday. Very important event because the second week of the outlook looks pretty darn dry once again. And at the moment, the rains that are advertised are not all that substantial. It will certainly be enough to moisten the topsoil and take the edge of stress off. It's not going to be a drought-busting rain, though. We're probably looking at 3 to 8 tenths of an inch with some local 1 to 1.5 inch amounts. Those heavier amounts will be rather poorly distributed across the production region. So, like I said, we buy a little bit of time, but not a lot. The best news, I suppose, is that once the rain event is done with, there's not going to be a return of hot weather. Temperatures will actually be a little cooler than usual in Argentina for a while next week. So that will help to conserve the moisture and slow down the return of the crop stress. But, you know, the big picture down the road is still not too great. We've got to get La Nina the weekend and open the door of opportunity for better rains to occur. I still think that'll occur, but it's going to have to be in January, and that puts a lot of pressure on because we have to have those crops planted by the time we get through January. So some of them can't be planted much later than the first part of that month. So we'll see what happens.
Does that have an impact on the second or safrinha crop corn in Brazil?
Probably not. Brazil's in tip-top shape. Those early soybeans were planted normally to even earlier than normal. So the situation in Brazil, there will be a drier bias from southern parts of Mato Grosso, and Mato Grosso to Sul down into Rio Grande do Sul through Sunday. Those areas will be dry, and it will be kind of warmish in that area, and the ground is going to firm up. But right after that, scattered showers and some thunderstorms will occur. Rio Grande do Sul is the only state that's probably not going to be seeing good rainfall as we go ahead and finish out this month. But the concern for safrinha crops at the moment is pretty minimal. I think that we're going to have these soybeans harvested normally, and we'll get a good jump on the safrinha crop. There's not any reason why we should expect rains to be poor when we get into January and February. And with La Nina weakening, that's just going to allow for the rains to continue to be favorable, I think. So I'm looking for a pretty good overall year for Brazil in both the early crops and the safrinha crop.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you in the new year.
You betcha.
That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.